Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
I'm Jeff Phelps, my buddy Andy Baskin, sitting in Columbus after a good evening's work last night.
Oh, man. We really haven't talked about it. Would you like to see, and I'll just bring it up real quick, and I'm sure we got to, would you like to see Will Howard or Quinshon Judkins or Trayvon Henderson in a Browns uniform next year?
Sure, why not?
Okay. I just figured. I think either one of those guys, the running backs kind of equal each other out.
I prefer a running back to Will Howard, but if you could pick up Will Howard in the third, fourth round and see, okay, could this guy become something? Could he become our Kirk Cousins? You know, fourth round pick who develops into a quarterback? Why not?
Yeah, I'm very curious how much he's raised his stock over the last 3 weeks.
I wonder if he has.
I don't know. That's a good question.
The pros don't always look at what happened on a college football field. They look at other things.
But when you start a national championship game when you've millions of eyes on you and you start off 13 for 13 the way he did last night, and he played mistake-free football last night, and I think that's important if you're looking for a guy that you can trust and maybe your head coach that wants all system stuff. I just think he'd be great in that situation. His arms got to get a little bit stronger still, but he did prove when he needed to that he could throw the ball downfield. Although that, I thought the pass at the end of Jeremiah Smith was going to bring down rain, because if he would have led him by just, I don't know, even a yard, that was a touchdown. So,
yeah, but that was a tough pass to throw, because Smith kind of cut in and then faded out, you know.
Yeah, and I just don't know how you could go one-on-one coverage on Jeremiah Smith. You've got, I mean, they do have talent all the way around that could, you know, beat him up a little. Carnell Tate had a good game last night. Emeka Ibuka, you know, for him, he's probably, it'll be interesting to see where he gets drafted, because I think he's got potential to go early. I also think Tyleek Williams and JTT are guys that could go early too.
All right, so riddle me this, okay? Mm-hmm. I wonder, and we don't know yet, I wonder, because Brian just said, hey, the goal every year will be to get into the playoff. Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. That's very pro. You know, that's pro football. And that's what this has become now. But think about Alabama, Auburn, Texas A&M, UCLA, USC, Michigan. I mean, those are big-time schools. They weren't in the playoff this year. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it be... I personally think, yes, it now becomes tougher to win a national championship because of the system in place. And you might even say, with everything in place, it's going to be tough to get into the tournament, you know, just even to be one of the 12 teams. And if they expand, 16, whatever. And I say it for this reason. If you're one of the big powers every year, like, you know, Alabama is usually going to get the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
You know, if you run the table or lose one game or whatever, you might be a pick to get into the, you know, the Final Four or whatever. Now you've got to get in there. But now you're going to, once you're in, it's not just one win and you're in the championship game. Now you've got to go through a gauntlet like Ohio State did. You know, they beat Tennessee, Oregon, Texas, and then you win the national championship against Notre Dame.
I mean, they also beat Penn State and Indiana that were top 10 teams.
Right, but I mean just to win the national championship, to get into the top 12, Andy's going to be tough because schools like Indiana are going to be spending money, schools that you don't think are going to be perennial powers, kids who might go in the past to Ohio State and be the backup quarterback, to UCLA and be the backup quarterback, are suddenly going to get more money to go to Indiana to be the starting quarterback. They're going to get paid.
Sure. You know,
they're
going
to go to TCU. They're going to go to Baylor. They're going to go to Wisconsin. They're going to go and get paid, which in theory should spread the talent and make the competitive level of the game better all the way around. And so I part of me thinks schools like Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Auburn, Clemson, Texas might have a tougher time because they're not going to immediately get every great recruit and some kid's going to go there and then, you know, end up transferring out. They might not go to there to begin with. And then once you're in, I mean, you got to win a bunch of games to win a national championship. I think everybody is going to have to take a little time and let this new system sink in and realize that, okay, you know, the best team might end up winning it, but they might get into the tournament as an eighth seed like Ohio State did this year.
Sure.
You know, instead of, you know, automatically we ran our regular season, we went 12-0, we're going to get into the Final Four.
I think the question that comes into play is where's the balance? The balance of the kid that grows up in Northeast Ohio or Central Ohio and wants to be Ohio State Buckeye, and it doesn't matter about getting paid. And, you know, I think that's
sweet, Andy.
Well, no, it's sweet till you're about 15 years old,
yeah.
Right? And then all of a sudden you realize you're like, guys around me, they're going to be making a lot of money and they're going to Ohio State, and it's more than a dream. They're not only getting their dream to get to play for this team and have the opportunity to go to school there, but they're also getting paid. And, you know, so I mean, there will always be the Jack Sawyers of the world, the guys from here that want to play for Ohio State because they're from here. And I think it'll make a difference. Also, when you look at Ohio State's defense, as much as we want to talk about the money, which obviously is a big deal, but these guys wanted to come back this year. You're looking at a defense that essentially all but two guys are probably going to, well, two guys that have to stay. Everybody else has the opportunity to, you know, play in the NFL next year and has a shot, whether it's, you know, even if it's down to seventh round or free agent after the draft, almost 9 out of the 11 players are going to have a crack at the NFL next year if they want it. It's amazing. But they wanted to be there this year. They wanted to return. You look at the senior starters.
And they got paid to return.
So that's another question that comes into play, too. You know, you want to sit here and talk about, well, it's the best team money can buy. Well, it's also the best team that money was able to keep their kids to stay there.
Hey, you know,
there's a difference there.
I've had enough of talking about the money because now it's just a part of it. You know what I mean?
True.
I mean, it's just part of it. Ed's in Elyria. Hello, Ed.
Hey, Ed.
Hi, guys. Hey, great season for the Buckeyes. Ryan Day, you got to remember, people that don't like him, he's like the third winningest coach, I think they said yesterday, all time.
Yeah.
In college football.
Through 50 games. And it was up there like with Newt Rockne and Leahy from Notre Dame. And it was a stunning graphic.
Yeah, and you just... You know, those guys don't just grow on trees where you could just throw them out and find another one to replace them. So I think he's done a great job. I mean, yeah, he's loved the Michigan games, but I'll take the national championship.
All right, Ed, quit being sensible. I don't know that that's allowed. Ryan is in Florida. Hello, Ryan.
Andy, Jeff.
Menigan's here, too.
You were all here.
So's Meredith.
Yes, Meredith, too. Hey, I just want to say, OHIO, this is just amazing. They can never take this away from us. This will be a banner just up there. Forget about all the accolades and all the unique scenarios of this year and the conundrums and, you know, just getting through just everyone's animosity towards that team up north and just everything involved in Ryan Day being fired, everything just worked out just like a storybook, man. This was a mission they set goals for, obviously, last year. And they came in and they just kicked the door hinges off in the playoffs. They said, this is ours. We're going to stake our claim. This is what we all came back for. And they showcased it, man. They just pushed people around like bullies. And they said, this is our trophy, and they did it. And any naysayers out there, obviously, that there were along the way, they shut their mouths up real quick when they saw what the Buckeyes are really all about. And, again, it just feels so good to be a Buckeye fan this morning. But, again, it's just awesome. And, again, it's just a banner. They're you know, not going to take away from us forever. It's, I mean, 2014, 2002, obviously now. I mean, just it's awesome. But, anyway, man, great to be a Buckeye this morning. You guys have a great day.
All right, Ryan. Thank you very much.
You know, it's interesting. You started talking about winning as college football coaches, and then I started thinking about of all time. And, you know, you automatically you think Newt Rockne, right? Like, that was the first thought that went through my head. And so then I went to my good friend at G. Eagle and ended up on Wikipedia. The college football coaches that had coached for 10 years with the highest winning percentage, Jeff, I bet you get this in a second. The best winning percentage, a 929 winning percentage for more than 10 years. You want to guess who it is? Here's the hard part.
Bear Bryant.
You got to think out of the box a little.
I don't know.
Larry Karras.
Oh, at Mountain Union. There you
go. Yes. I mean, think about that winning percentage. He was 332 and 24 and three ties. Wow. Pretty amazing.
And he made it through the playoff and kept winning. Nixon Talmadge.
And by the way, you know, if you ask me, where did I learn, you know, why was I such a big proponent? I'm still a big proponent of 16 teams. It's from watching Mountain Union go to a national championship and have to go through the playoff. And then, you know, watching Montana when I was out there, or watching Youngstown State, to see those schools go through a true playoff system, it's something totally different. And I always, as I was sitting, I remember when I worked in Columbus, I'm like, man, this college football system is so bogged down by these bowl games and these meaningless bowl games too, right? And you're like, well, you got to get to this to have a chance. And we're talking about four teams winning a national championship. At least it got better throughout the years. I think this is where they're going. It's 10 times better than it was. And, you know, I don't know, one of the callers said something about a bulky wait in between games. Are you kidding? It used to be Ohio State would play Michigan and then you'd have to wait till the new year. You had to wait more than a month to see them play again. That's bulky. This is fun.
It is fun. Nixon Talmadge. Nick, got about a minute.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. Hey, real quick, there's so much to talk about, but I just want to ask you one question, the reason for my call. I don't know if you guys noticed how the payouts work, how Notre Dame cleared $20 million.
Yeah. Good deal
Notre
for them.
Dame does have to split it. Some of the other stuff, though, if you look like SMU, Clemson, those guys made more. Texas, they made more money than Ohio State did because of the way they dispersed the money. I mean, SMU got $4 million. We got like $2.5 million. And then like an Arizona State got $500,000. Meanwhile, Notre Dame's getting $20 million. I wonder if this is going to – because we always knew college is a business. It's not as much as we want to look at it like a sport and a kid's thing, you know. But I wonder if this is going to change the landscape of how Ohio State maybe says, hey, maybe we want to become independent. I mean, I know they're a money printing machine now, but, I mean, they want to print more. So I just kind of wonder how they're going to.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I was talking with somebody about this yesterday, too. The other part is Notre Dame has their own TV money on top of that. So, you know, Ohio State's got to split that TV money with the rest of the Big Ten, although some of the newer schools didn't have a full percentage going into this year. And then, you know, like the big winner of the Rose Bowl was still the Pac-12, which is only two teams right now. I was reading stuff about that like how Oregon State and Washington State made a bundle on the Rose Bowl this year, and they weren't even there because there was still Pac-12 money involved in that.
More Buckeye talk coming up. National champions, the Ohio State Buckeyes. Think about that. Mary Kay Cabot covers the Browns for the Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. The latest she's hearing about what might be going on with the offensive coordinator. And who's going to do what? We'll get her thoughts coming up on Baskin and Phelps. We go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. She covers the Browns for the Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com. She's Miss Mary Kay Cabot. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Mary Kay.
We are well. We're talking a lot of Buckeyes today. First of all, let's throw it out. Will Howard. Is he anybody's NFL starting quarterback?
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I always like to wait and see what the NFL types think about these quarterbacks, and we really don't know the answer to that yet until we start going to the Senior Bowl, which I'm doing next week, and then to the Combine, and then you start to see the order of where these guys are shaking out. So I'm very curious to see what the NFL is going to say about one Will Howard, because I think there is a lot to like. I just don't know where he's going to land.
Mary Kay, I think it's also interesting to look at Ohio State's running backs. Trayvon Henderson, Quinshon Judkins had, you know, three yesterday. They could be, I would think, in the Browns' wheelhouse if they were looking for a running back. What do you think of those guys?
Yeah, I agree. I think those guys are really good. I think their stock is rising, and I also do think that the Browns value Ohio State players, as we have seen over the last few years. I mean, we know now that they really put a lot of stock into the well-coached Ohio State players, and they've got DeJuan, they've got Ronnie Hickman, they've got Mike Hall, of course they've got Denzel Ward, and so I really do think that they will take a good look at those guys.
I'll just take Jack Sawyer and call it a day and put him on the defensive line. That would be fine with me. The dust has settled a little bit on Tommy Reese as offensive coordinator. Well, what are you hearing, Mary Kay? Is Tommy going to come in and sway Kevin Stefanski's offensive philosophy, or is he going to run Kevin's offensive philosophy? And then, of course, the big play-calling question will come up. What do you think?
I think they will work together hand-in-hand to reshape this offense once again. I think they'll take elements out of what they were trying to do last year in terms of RPO and spread and those kinds of things, because those things are not going away. Even though they will add in more of a power running game, I'm sure they're going to go out and get themselves a really good running back to pair with Jerome Ford. I think they'll get back to some of the wide zone that we've been hearing the offensive linemen talk about. But I think it will be an amalgamation of the things that they know that they can do best. And first and foremost, it must be geared towards the quarterback that is going to be their QB1. You have to do that. You can't take a quarterback and force him into your scheme and your preferences. You have to find the things that he does really, really well and play those things.
Mary Kay, I mean, as we sit here and we watch the playoffs too, what are we learning? And I think that every time I watch a playoff game, I do the judge game, and I'm like, how far away are the Browns? How far away? Is it as bad as I think it is sometimes? And other times I'm like, maybe it's a tweak here or a tweak there. What do you think?
Well, one of the first things that comes to my mind is the takeaways. I mean, when you just watched some of the things that went on this weekend and you saw the way that the Bills were punching that ball out of there, yeah. I mean, do you ever really see very many Browns players doing that? They need to go harder after the takeaways. They have to do that. They were last in the NFL with four interceptions. In today's game, that shouldn't happen. Those balls are flying everywhere out there. So they've got to be able to get more of those. They've got to get more forced fumbles, more strip sacks. So these are some of the things that they're going to have to focus on. And then when I look at these teams, the amount of amazing catches that some of these guys are making, it's mind-blowing. I mean, the quarterback play is one thing, and we know how good these quarterbacks are when you get to this level. But the corollary to that is some really, really amazing pass catchers, receivers, tight ends. And the Browns need to up their game in that regard. Jerry Jeudy is a nice start, but I think they need to add three more really good, almost Pro Bowl caliber pass catchers if you really want to bring your game up to the next level. And then I would go I think you have to find another surefire double-digit sacker somewhere.
So in other words, Mary Kay, and I'm in agreement with you, this team needs a lot. I thought it was lacking skill position players at the beginning of the season. I know that you thought the same thing. I look at the running back situation now, and I think, okay, you need at least one, if not two. I agree with you about the pass catchers. I mean, they need a lot of stuff. You only have so many draft choices. How do you think that Andrew Berry approaches this offseason? Is he thinking trade for veterans? Is he going free agent? I mean, I know he's going to try and do everything, but they have a lot of holes to fill.
Well, they do, but they also have a lot of draft picks, and they will have the money that they need to buy a couple of free agents. So I think you can reasonably guess that they'll take a quarterback with their first round pick. I mean, that just seems the way that it's probably going to go. I don't know for sure, but
that's what your gut's telling you right now.
Well, I think it will have to be under strong consideration. I don't know for sure. Like I said, I haven't even gotten to the Senior Bowl. If I get to the Senior Bowl and I have a bunch of people saying there's no way that either of these guys or these top three guys should be going in the first round and aren't going to win for you in the NFL, then that might change my thinking. But as I head into it, my thinking is that they're probably going to find someone that they really like and they'll take that person in the first round. Not sure, but when you're picking this high, it just screams quarterback to me. Looking forward to evaluating these guys and seeing them up close and personal and doing my diligence, but it just feels like a quarterback draft year. And then, you know, you get to the second round and you can get a great receiver in the second round. You can wait to get your running back. They have 9 picks. They'll probably end up with a couple of more compensatory picks. So you can fill a lot of holes. You just have to make sure that you're drafting really, really well in those middle to late rounds, but they've done a nice job with that over the years.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if they're going to think that. I look at the draft and I'm like, does it feel like if you draft a quarterback at 2, are you just reaching? Like Jeff and I have this conversation about how, well, if it's the guy you think, then you should take him at 2. I don't have that feeling this year, and I wonder how the arguments will be in Berea if they say, you know what, I don't think that quarterback that can take us to the promised land is there. What are we going to do now?
Well, I think if you have an inkling or a thought that you can develop a quarterback and he can become a winner for you, then I'm going quarterback in the first round. That's just how I feel about it, because I would much rather whiff on a quarterback that can change the fortunes of a franchise than hit upon a player that isn't going to do much for you in terms of shifting the balance of power in the AFC North, as we always like to say. I would rather swing for the fences and go for the quarterback if you think that he can win for you. If you don't and you're absolutely sure he can't, then of course you don't do that.
So, Mary Kay, the one thing you said there that concerns me is development. And I agree, if they feel like they want to draft a quarterback at 2 that they can develop, then you're going to have to take your time. I just feel like it's not just the Browns. I think it's almost all NFL teams, too, that if we're drafting somebody at 2, they better be ready to go week 1. I just think it's not a healthy thought, and I think it puts too much pressure on the situation. And I also think that failure comes into play much quicker when you do that. Can the Browns resist that thought process?
Well, I don't think you can live in your fears, especially when you need a quarterback. I think you have to evaluate these quarterbacks. There are probably, I would say, maybe 4 or 5 that they would be seriously looking at for the first round or the second round or wherever they feel they can get him. And then just pull the trigger and do what you have to do, because they absolutely 100%, as we all know, they need a quarterback going forward. And I don't think you can wait until next year. I don't think you can say, oh, well, let's do all this year and then finagle it and work it out so that you can get one of these quarterbacks next year. If you plan on winning in 2025, you're not going to be picking high enough to get one of the best quarterbacks next year. You're picking high enough this year. Hopefully for them, they see something they like and they go for it.
Tommy Rees was at Alabama. Jalen Milroe is coming out of Alabama. Should we connect any dots, or does he have any edge, or is he in the same boat as everybody else?
Oh, no, he's got all the inside intel on Jalen Milroe that you could possibly want to have. We don't know what that means. Sometimes you can know too much about a player, and therefore you don't want to draft him. I have no idea how Tommy Rees feels about Jalen Milroe's ability as a pro yet. Hopefully we'll get a better sense of that over the next few weeks. But remember back when Butch Davis and Pete Garcia were here, they overlooked a few guys that they probably shouldn't have because they were a little bit too close to the situation. So hopefully Tommy's got a great handle on Jalen Milroe and will be able to say, you know, yay or nay, middle of the first round, top of the first, whatever the case may be. I think he will loom large in the evaluation process.
Mary Kay, what's coming for Myles Garrett as we sit here right now, and what do you think his mood was when the season ended?
Well, it seems like he had a really good conversation with Andrew Berry. That's what we heard on Hard Knocks. I did a post on that. So with him saying that, you know, we're closer than people think we are, I think that's really good. I think that bodes well for him being here. Now, the other part of that is the fact that he did reveal after the season finale that an extension, or at least talks about an extension, are going to be part of the off-season discussions. So I think we need to see what's going to happen there. But it seems to me, just from hearing what Andrew has said and what Miles has said, it looks good for him being back.
Mary Kay, look at the other teams in the AFC North. If you're the Browns, do you think you're close to any of them right now?
Well, once again, the number one thing that I keep coming back to right now is the fact that the Browns gave the ball away 34 times, which tied for first in the NFL. I think it was with the Titans. Well, the teams that have the number one and number two pick are the Titans and the Cleveland Browns. You cannot win football games by turning the ball over consistently. So they've got to figure out whatever they can do to stop doing that. And one of the ways they can do that is run the ball a lot more than they did last year, and run it better than they did last year. So they've got to solve that. I mean, when you look at Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry and what those guys, and some of the other running backs too, and what they're doing for their football teams, the Browns need some of that. They know that they need that. And so I think that's going to help tremendously. You can be in contention if you're winning the turnover battle week by week. So they've got to figure out a way to do that on both sides of the ball. Take it away, stop giving it away. And then, of course, if you get really good quarterback play, I mean, you don't have to necessarily next year be getting Jaden Daniels play or Patrick Mahomes play, but if you can get good quarterback play, run the ball, and up the ante some on defense, you can get back in the game next year. Not saying that they're going to go out and win the Super Bowl next year, but you can get back in contention. I think that they have the ability to do it.
Mary Kay, thank you. Enjoy the Senior Bowl. We hope to talk to you from Mobile. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary Kay.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot, her coverage of the Senior Bowl will be must-read stuff on Cleveland.com. I'm Jeff Phelps. He is AB.
Click, click, click.
Yes, yes.
Mary Kay said, when you're drafting two and you need one, you got to think quarterback. I agree completely, except for one thing.
Yeah, go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say on this.
If they look at these guys and they think, yep, these guys, we don't think any one of them is a surefire thing to be our quarterback for 4 or 5 years, then I wouldn't take a quarterback at two. If they think, obviously, if they think that this guy can be a starting quarterback in the league for a dozen years, then you take him, even if he's the 20th ranked guy on your board. But if you're not convinced that these guys can actually do the job at an upper echelon level, and by upper echelon, I think top 10, top 12. Yep. I don't want to tie myself to somebody who I think is like, yeah, he might be the 20th best quarterback in the NFL. I don't want to tie myself to him with the second pick in the draft. I want to do some other things and then figure out a different way to get my quarterback. But if they evaluate him, Andy, as being, yep, he could be a pretty good quarterback for a long time, I get it, and I would.
I'm not all in on the quarterback at two thing. I just think, and if you just, have we not learned anything about quarterback, this team, and drafting super high? And if you have the second pick in the draft, please go find someone that can be here for 10 years and not someone that really needs a whole lot of development. Because no matter who gets picked at number two, the pressure for them to start week one is going to start the second their name is called, because they're the second pick in the NFL draft. Don't do that to a quarterback that you don't think can go out there and get you to the playoffs as a rookie in that scenario. I'm not buying it. I'm not feeling it. I'm not a huge fan of what we're seeing coming out this year. I might be totally wrong, but this franchise has been wrong since 1999 when it comes to drafting a quarterback and trying to get this thing right. Don't force it. If you do believe that this quarterback can get you to the playoffs in year one, knock it out. Do it. But I'm not buying that from any quarterback. Get me a guy then that can be here for 10 years and play linebacker or play defensive line or be an offensive lineman. Don't waste the pick. I don't want to sit here and try to evaluate someone who's got a 50-50 chance of being a five-year quarterback for the Cleveland Browns at number two, when you could sit here and say, well, you know, I'm looking at a defensive end in a very heavy defensive end draft, and if you think a guy like Abdul Carter from Penn State can, you know, be the perfect complement to a guy who's on the other side of the line defensively and can be here for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, do that over trying to think it. Grab a quarterback later in the draft and go out and get a free agent quarterback and try to get this team back to the playoffs now, if that's what you think you can do.
All right, let me bring up a scenario you're not going to like, or
sure,
or history that you're not going to like.
Okay.
And I don't know if you'll remember this. In 2017, the Browns had the number one pick in the draft, and they ended up taking Miles. And
right,
Miles is going to the Hall of Fame. Okay, we mm-hmm. know that.
They got that one right. Right? They got it right. I know where you're going.
Did
yes, they
or didn't they?
Yes, they did. They got it right.
Okay, I'll agree, but again, with another caveat here. I don't know if you'll remember, in 2017, we made sure we talked to people in every town where a college quarterback was who might be a guy who might be considered a number one pick.
Mm-hmm.
And a buddy of mine from my days working in Texas is the play-by-play guy for the Texas Tech Red Raiders football team.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on our show, and we asked him, you know, he was telling us all about Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
And when we summed it up, I said, okay, so what would you do? Where do you think Patrick Mahomes is going to be? This guy works at Texas Tech, right? He's their play-by-play guy. And I'll always remember, because I was surprised to hear my buddy say, I don't think he's a first-round pick. I think he's a second-round pick, and I think he could have some success in the league. And that's a guy who was calling his games. And my buddy's a real knowledgeable guy. He knows his stuff. And I thought, really? Wow, second-round pick for this guy. We're hearing some different things. But that just – and then, you know, the Browns didn't take him at number one. Chicago – didn't take him at number two. They took Mitch Trubisky.
Right.
And then Kansas City trades up for him. And though I love Miles, I think the Browns, you know, missed their opportunity to set themselves on a different path by not taking Patrick Mahomes. You could even make the argument by not taking Deshaun Watson, who went to Houston at 12.
Two picks later, yeah.
Yeah, and was very, very good, you know, with Houston, obviously. Mm. And that's why I approach this apprehensively, Andy, because you have the second pick. And as stupid as this sounds, Miles is a Hall of Famer. Miles is, to me, one of the best defensive players I've seen ever in a Browns uniform. But if you have a chance to take a guy who could be, you know, an upper echelon NFL quarterback, you have to take him at number two. The Browns had to take him at number one. They just didn't evaluate Patrick Mahomes that way. And the Browns better evaluate properly when it comes to these quarterbacks, because the hope is you're not back that high again in a draft. That's my only thought. It's nothing against Miles. He's stunningly good. But you could have had Patrick Mahomes. And that, you know, I mean, if you're picking one or the other, there's no question which one you pick.
Here's my fear, and I know Mary Kay said you can't live in your fears, but who was the number two pick in that draft? It was a quarterback from Cleveland.
Which is why, yeah, you've got to nail it, Andy. That's the thing.
Did Chicago try to force Trubisky out too quick? Remember, he didn't have very many starts at North Carolina when he came out. Was he truly ready to be a quarterback that could lead the third biggest market in the country to the Super Bowl? Right? That's the, you know, I wonder what Mitch Trubisky's career, or Mitchell for his mom, right? Trubisky, what his career would have been like if he was drafted a little bit later. Would he still be a perennial backup the way he is right now? And by the way, I think he's got an awesome job right now.
Making a lot of money.
I mean, clearly business-wise, it worked out unbelievable for him, but by the same token, what happens if he gets drafted later in the first round or later in the second round or maybe as a third or fourth round? Like, if you could go back and redraft Mitch Trubisky, where do you think he would fall right now, knowing what his NFL career has been? What round do you think he would have gone in then?
Probably third.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and you'd be like, wow, That was a good deal. I got a third round pick, and he is a perennial backup here for his entire career. And that might work out. That draft right there is everything that I think the Browns need to look at when it comes to making sure that if they want a quarterback at two, you better be right. But how much pressure are you going to put on this guy to be a starter, and how fast?
And
we rush quarterbacks through here way too fast.
Well, and there's no guarantee that if you take a defensive player at two, he becomes anything like Myles Garrett. Your evaluation on this pick, if you're going to go quarterback, just has to be right. I mean, it's that simple.
Mike, Jeff, just real quick. I know we laugh about DeShone Kizer with
hang
you,
on, Mike.
But I liked DeShone Kizer when he was coming out of Notre Dame. I just didn't think he was ready.
Agreed completely.
He really wasn't ready to be called a franchise quarterback the day he stepped on the field in Cleveland. That was ridiculous.
And they got him at the right spot. They got him in the second round. Either he wasn't going to be good enough, or they rushed him so much that he never got it back together. Mike, thanks for your patience.
Hey, no problem, guys. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good, good.
You know, this is not a real great quarterback draft class, you know. You got Sanders at two or one, and then you got Ward. You know, they can go either way, flip-flop. But I was looking at this guy from Alabama since Jeff had brought
Jalen
up Reese
Milroe
right here.
Yeah.
And this guy is 6'2". 225 and run a 4.6. Now watch his highlights, and I know when they show highlights, it's going to be his best games, best plays. You talking about Jackson 2.0? I mean, he's got an arm, he makes quick decisions, and he's got that speed. And this is what you're going to need in the NFL, a very athletic quarterback, somebody that's big and strong, you know, and can take those hits when he do take off and running. So right now I'm thinking, is he not high enough to get the number two spot, or can they get him like in the later round? I think they picked number one in the second round. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I see him in the first round on a bunch of mock drafts. I don't know that he gets there. Yeah,
I've even seen him going at two to the Browns, Mike.
Yeah, I just saw that too.
Yeah, okay. Because
Chris Trapasso likes him at number two to the Browns.
I was thinking the same thing. You got to go at him because I don't think Sanders is going to let his son come here, regardless of what the situation is. So. You know, it'd be a circus, just like the ball boys, you know, in the NBA. So, you know,
all right,
Mike. I'd go with Melrose and then try to, you know, get me a running back somewhere down in there.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. Again, it's going to come down to evaluation. You have the opportunity to pick two of the top three quarterbacks in this draft, at least the ones that people think are the top three quarterbacks. You're going to have a chance to get two of them. But you're going to have to evaluate him and make sure you're right. I mean, you cannot miss on this. You just can't do it. So that's the concern for me.
Jeff, I liked Riley Leonard last night too. Man, was he elusive! He was impossible to bring down last night. I mean, there were parts of his game that I really really liked last night, and you know, and we've seen that all season long too. I wonder what he'll be like when he gets to the NFL.
We'll see. And Andy, there are a bunch of guys who you might be able to get later and see if they can develop and whatever happens and go from there. We'll see. The Cavaliers beating up on the Phoenix Suns last night. That was without Evan Mobley. That's good, but they were without Evan Mobley. That's not good. Chris Fedor from Cleveland.com is going to join us momentarily. He'll be talking about that. I'll ask him about Evan. What is injury situations all about? It's Baskin and Phelps right here on The Fan.